This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. Welcome in. This is Country Roads Confidential at earsports.com, a Paramount podcast follows. I am Mike Casaza, welcoming in Chris Anderson for the start of Big 12 play in the 2023-24 basketball season. A little post-New Year's action. Last couple of years, West Virginia has started before the new year. A year ago, things really started to go sideways with a couple losses on the road, Eric Stevenson incident, firing Larry Harrison. The season, it really changed, and nothing has ever been the same since then, up to and including this season. Chris Anderson, the most non-conference losses during the regular season since the 78-79 season. The gravity of that statement is pretty heavy to me, and yet not at all surprising.
Not at all. And I think some of the numbers we're going to throw out here in a few minutes are going to make it even worse, because the numbers we're seeing, even with the guys coming back, is not promising for what they're about to go through in this Big 12 conference.
Harder than previous iterations of the Big 12? TBD, because we saw what happened in football and don't know how Cincinnati, UCF, BYU, Houston fair. And oh, wait a second, Houston's number one in the net, BYU is number two, UCF and Cincinnati are both top 75, I believe. I'm kind of in the middle on this. My hunch says this is going to be harder than before, but part of me is like, we've been down this road, but I also know football isn't like basketball, and here I am, I'm already talking myself into circles here. Where do you stand on this?
I do think it's going to be difficult, obviously, but I do wonder if there's still going to be those, what do we want to call them, the DePaul games, the USF games, where there's just so many teams in the league that you're bound to run into a couple games where you should get a win. But then that raises the question, is that team you should get a win over West Virginia this year? And that's how other teams are viewing WVU, which is not great.
This is legitimately the reality for West Virginia. 169 in the net. That's actually up quite a bit despite their loss, 5-8. They have no fewer than 19 games left, 18 in the regular season and conference play, at least one in the conference tournament. All 19 are against teams that are above them in the net. And the 13th place team in the net is Oklahoma State, which is up at 134. So that's like the bottom right there, because 134, 168, Chris, you got to go to up into the top 100 to get to the number 12 team in the Big 12. That would be Kansas State at 96. And then, as I mentioned, UCF 70. So all those teams that I mentioned before that are new to the conference are in the top 70 of the net. The net's goofy this time of year. I understand that. I think you can make an argument certainly that Houston is the best team in the country, or at least worthy of the number one spot. I have a hard time believing BYU was number two in the country, but that's what the net says right now. Before we dig into all this stuff, let's take a temperature here, Chris. 5-8, and I think it's fair to say that if West Virginia is in the position to be in the selection committee's conversation, it's going to be because they performed well in Big 12 play, got some big wins, avoided some bad losses, which, again, may really not exist, apart from that Oklahoma State game. but also vindicated a lot of the hype about the roster that was not in place until, well, heck, not even now, because they don't have Jesse Edwards for two more weeks almost here. What will it take, let's say, overall plus in conference, to be on the good side of the bubble? It's one thing to be on the bubble, but to be on the good side doesn't mean you're going to get in, but you're at least in that conversation of, you know, last four in or safely in. What do you think it takes in the next 18, 19 games?
All right, so 18 regular season games left, right? You got that number right in my head. It's got to be 12 and 6. I mean, I think it's a number that I don't even believe to be attainable, given the roster limitations at the minute. But I think it's 12 and 6. I mean, to end up on the good side of the bubble, because again, that's 17 and 14, which isn't great, but I think you can legitimately be like, hey, we're not looking at the 5-8 start. We're looking at just Big 12 conference play. And I think you almost have to get to that point. I mean, it may be 11-7.
Would you have taken 12-6 or 11-7 on October 1st?
Yeah.
It would have been awesome, right?
Yeah.
And now you're like, oh my gosh, they need to get this. Like, you would have probably been like, you know what, man, if they went 8 or 9 games in this Big 12 with this roster, that's a pretty good season. They actually have to go above and beyond, right? Like that. And here's why those numbers are so realistic, I think. Not only are they 3 games below 500, and they really you can't go in 500, even if their season's wonky and they're, hey, wow, they did really well when they were healthy. Well, they're going to have to do really well when they're healthy, which means like they're not going to have Edwards for a couple of more games here. Maybe you're looking at like that maybe 4 more games, one of those things. It just depends how it works out. He missed, I think, the final 9 games, which is a little bit more than 4 weeks when he had the same injury 2 seasons ago. So that kind of gives you the idea of how many games he might miss. But when you are healthy, you're going to have to actually play really, really well to, like I said, to validate that suggestion that this is what this team should have been. But you're going to have to clear 500, and you're going to have to play really well. And being 3 below right now, plus however many they might drop in these next few games we can talk about, that's why you really have to be good or make a run in the tournament. And, 11 or 12 wins, that's going to be an exceptional year. 12 wins, they're in. I don't care what they do in Kansas City. That would validate all the things they talked about they haven't been able to been. They would have been able to do had they been healthy. But the trouble is that, man, every time they lose a game coming up here, and there are a couple that are imminently losable, they're going to have to play that much better and get on that much of a streak here, which is why, you know, a game at Houston or a home game against Kansas, which bookends this stretch here, you almost feel like you got to get one of them. Maybe not both of them, but you almost got to get one of them. And that could be a difficult thing to do for sure. Boy, I just get that number just sounds so crazy, Chris, 12, but that's probably also accurate too. What makes you feel good about this being a possibility? I think a lot of people are going to think, you know what, you guys are out of your mind. And maybe that's true, but there are certainly talented players. If you listen as recently as their final non-conference game against Chris Holtman, he talked about how he knew they were better than the record and better than what he had seen on film. And in fact, he didn't even watch film from the first, 12 games of the year. He just looking at what they did the last game. We're trying to figure out, you don't watch a lot of film in the first 12 games. You watch like the most recent ones to figure out, all right, what do they do with Battle? What do they do with Farrakhan? What do they do with Kreese and Battle together? Kreese and Farrakhan together. Just trying to figure out who they have and what they do, because it's going to be very different without Edwards and with those three guys in there. And you call it the most difficult scout in his 25 years of coaching. I think there's an advantage there, Chris, because maybe teams just don't know what to do and who to take away. And maybe West Virginia has, buts built in there. Yeah, you're going to take us away, but we have this as a counter. And it looks like they can score and they can put points up when they have foul trouble out of the way and when they have some momentum and they're hitting from the perimeter. Trouble is, it's difficult to get to there and to sustain that. And if something like foul trouble or a cold spell comes in, boy, they are vulnerable.
Yeah, there was something I brought up after the last game that was kind of a negative, but may also work out as a positive, is that it seems like there's two types of offenses that West Virginia can and sometimes does run. And one is where Kreese is kind of this, traffic cop that is directing everyone where to go. He's dishing, he's leading the offense, and kind of finding the open guys and giving them open shots. And then there's the other offense where it's Battle and Farrakhan create kind of for themselves. But when the shot's not there, they're still capable of dishing it off, finding other guys, or they draw enough attention to themselves that it gets other guys open. And it's almost like two different offenses. And I think there is some kind of like butting of heads there, not like with each other, but kind of like, hey, we're trying to do two different things here. We got to figure this out. And that's just going to come with playing together, which obviously they have not done very much of. And maybe they will do more of moving forward. But it'll also throw a wrench in how you defend this team and what you game plan for, just like you're saying there, and just like Ohio State coach said as well.
Just it's just fascinating on many levels. I just don't know where to go on this one here, and it's gonna be tough right away. We can talk about this a stretch right now. I'm looking at the bar tour of Excite and trying to figure out what to think of West Virginia, but they start with Houston, and the expectation at Bartorvik is for Houston to win by 20 points. That would not be a great start to Big 12 play.
Oh, it would not. But it also would you be shocked if that's what happened?
I don't know what to expect, Chris, because I've seen them get pushed and pushed and pushed, but also come back and sometimes surprise me. And I've seen them play down to almost all their competition, but also because they haven't played a great schedule, but also have when they've, it kind of feels like when they get cornered, they do play well sometimes. And they're really cornered right now, too. But the rest of their schedule, man, is just so difficult. They have the first actual Big 12 game of the season. That'll be on ESPN Plus. Houston, welcome to Big 12, ESPN Plus. But man, then they get just some tricky games there that are going to be really difficult for them. I don't know how they're going to get out of this, but this stretch coming up is going to be hard. And again, when you start with Houston and you end with Kansas and you get Kansas State and Texas in the middle there, like it's a rough stretch of games here. And they're going to have to get a couple of them because I think there's something soft after that. There are some winnable games in there too. But do you believe in magic numbers? Like you see these things before, like, oh, they're playing this, you know, Saturday, Monday. They got to get one of these two. They got to get both these two. This is a bit more prolonged, but in this immediate flurry of games right here to open Big 12 play, just because they have to keep their head above water for as long as they can until and after Edwards comes back. Do you think they got to get a couple of these, and which ones can they not afford to lose? Which ones do they have to lose? Or is the concept of a magic number right now just crazy because you have to suspend any type of expectation with this team and the way it's gone?
I do think you have to suspend expectations, but if you want to talk about any sort of chance of doing anything or even kind of being competitive, I don't want to think about a road where this goes so far south that this season just, I mean, you know, things get worse than they already are. We'll just leave it at that. But if you can go these next five, which is at number three, Houston, home Kansas State, home number 20, Texas, at number 11, Oklahoma, home number two, Kansas. If you can get two wins in there, I mean, it's wild. Like, hey, you go 2-3, that's a huge win to go 2-3 during that five game stretch, given that I believe, if my math was correct, was Edwards maybe coming back for that Kansas game, kind of between that Oklahoma Kansas that Wednesday Saturday, I think was when the timeline worked out for him to come back.
Surgery on December 20. It's a Wednesday. Oklahoma game is on Wednesday, January 17. Probably more likely the same for Kansas, I would guess. Houston 3, Kansas State home, Texas 20, at Oklahoma 11, to Kansas at West Virginia. Yeah, two wins there. All right, you're feeling good because now you're still in that 2-3. Can we get ourselves above 500 stretch? And that's important because of what follows there. Not a lot of soft spots in the schedule, but at UCF, at Oklahoma State, I do feel like if they come out of there with two wins, they're going to feel pretty good. They could double up. I don't think winning at UCF is insane. And then Oklahoma State is the bad team, maybe the other underwhelming team in the conference. Cincinnati, don't know what to make of them. The schedule has been interesting. They have a good win-loss record. UCF, Oklahoma State, two road wins, come home, Cincinnati, fine. And again, BYU, I just don't know what to think about with BYU, but would not be surprised if BYU came all the way to Morgantown for a 6 p.m. game on February 3rd and had a hard time. So there's a chance there for them to get going. They're going to have to pluck some of them too, but certainly the Big 12 is going to be a challenge here. What do you make of the Big 12, the newcomers, the cast of characters you expect to be good, surprises, disappointments, anything that stands out, anyone that stands out to you so far?
I mean, BYU is a shock, right? Like I'm trying to, as you were talking there, I was trying to go back and find my preseason ballot, what I sent in for preseason Big 12 basketball. think I had BYU like in the top 10 of the league, much less. Yeah, I know. Here we go. I found the official media rankings. They were 13th, picked 13th, and by a considerable margin as well, out of the 14 teams. And so I'm stunned by them being not only not 13th in the league, but number, at least number 12 in the nation right now. They are tops in the league. Let me pull up, I'm just pulling up these stats, like in rebounding margin. I think that's a big reason why they're doing what they're doing, and they're just dominating teams. They have the best point differential, the best rebounding differential, the best assist differential. They are efficient. They are making 3-point shots. I believe they're second in the league in 3-point shooting differential as well. So they are dominating their opponents in pretty much every fashion, which is certainly not something I expect to come to this season.
Haven't beat anybody outside of San Diego State. It's a home win. They played once on the road, lost to Utah. That's always a pretty intense road game. Their schedule was number 303, according to KenPom. A lot left to prove there, too.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Is Oklahoma State going to do this every year? Just kind of mess around in the non-conference, and all of a sudden you're in like the second weekend of February, going, "Man, Mike Boynton has his team right on the edge." Or is this the year where Mike Boynton just kind of runs out of magic and they got to make a change?
As I said, they seem to do a lot of things, a lot of years that are along of, that are very confusing. So I was curious which of those things you were talking about. But yeah, I
point.
mean, this is one where I wonder if they can come back from it. But as soon as I started thinking that, I believe they've won 4 in a row, 5 in a row now. Like, I mean, they're 7-5, but they've won 4 or 5 in a row now. And so maybe they have kind of figured it out. Again, schedule soft in a non-conference schedule. They didn't have an Ohio State like West Virginia did, but still, maybe they're getting right before conference play.
Do you know the leading scorer in the Big 12?
Enlighten me.
Plays for
Raekwon Battle?
Kansas.
Oh.
Well, Battle would be, yes, but he doesn't have enough participation right
Right.
now. He plays for Kansas.
Okay.
Is that a good clue?
That's a pretty good clue.
Who is it?
Is it? I was about to say Dickinson, but it's
Nope.
not Dickinson. Otherwise, you wouldn't be asking me, I don't
No.
think.
All right, I have another clue. He's a transfer.
Oh, McCuller?
Yes.
That's
I mean, that's a guy who's known for being a team player, a defensive guy. He's averaging 20.4 points per game. And again, made 23, 75 free throws, 85 baskets. So he's kind of doing his thing everywhere. But he's been, when I've watched him, he's played very well against some good teams, too. And again, not surprising that Kansas is at the top of the league right here, too. Collectively on talent, when West Virginia has its five, and that's going to be, let's just project here, but you're going to include Edwards, I would imagine. Creasa, I guess you would. I don't know if you start Farrakhan or not. Let's say no. Creasa, Battle. No, let's start Farrakhan,
I'll
huh?
say maybe we don't start him, but he's certainly one of the best five.
Yeah. So let's start him because I'm looking just right now. Like I'm getting to this point here, I guess is what I'm saying. Creasa, the guy I'm not mentioning is a guy I want to mention. Creasa, Farrakhan, Battle. You get Edwards back. A Cook's off the bench. You know, what do you do with Harris, Wilson, so on and so forth? Kobe Johnson, once upon a time, was a good player in this team. Haven't mentioned Quinn Slezinski. And that seems like the one guy who is a man on the island right now because the guard play has been so good. And he does not have that low post guy to really help him out and to take some of the heat off of him. And I don't know if defenses are gearing up toward him. It doesn't seem like he became a focal point and got double teams. It just seems like he's a product of not a lot of shots going around. Great at the beginning of the season, efficient scorer, could get up a lot of shots, would make a lot of them, got to the foul line a bunch, could rebound, pass a lot, but expectedly and perhaps dramatically, his production has dipped a little bit because they've gotten Battle back, who takes 20 something shots a game, and Farrakhan's been a good scorer. Creasa does look like he tries to find Slezinski, but we're talking so much about Edwards and what they're missing with him and how much the three guards have brought to the table, delayed, unexpectedly, whatever you want to call it. I do feel like they're a well-positioned Quinn Slezinski away from being able to make the sort of move, or at least being able to be in position to make the sort of move that we're talking about. What have you seen? And is it as simple as saying that he just has to get used to his surroundings changing again?
I think he needs to understand what his game is because it seemed like he was like, hey, I am a 3-point shooting big man, a stretch four kind of guy. And at the start of the year, sure. I think he was shooting like 40%, something close, like upper 30s, which is very good, especially for that size and the number he was shooting. He was averaging like 5 or 6 3-point attempts a game for the first say month or so of the season. And but that wasn't sustainable. Like if you go back and look at his entire career, he has been about a 30% 3-point shooter. He was 29% last year, 34 the year before that, 23% the year before that. So that's him shooting 38, 39% was not sustainable, and it's come crashing down in recent games. 0 of 4, 1 of 6, 0 of 3 the last 3 games. So again, I think he needs to realize he is more of a slashing, cutting, driving to the basket kind of guy, which is still a mismatch. I think too many people look at it and say, hey, you want to have those 6'9" guys that can shoot a three. But, well, you know what else you like? Those 6'9" guys that drag the big men out to the perimeter and can drive by them because they don't have the lateral quickness to stay in front of them. And so he can attack in that way. Like, I'm not saying he can't attack, but he can and should attack by going to the basket because he's pretty efficient with that. And he's got that weird, like, old man YMCA body strength where he can contort his body and move around. And make some funky layups and get his body around other guys, because he's pretty good at that. I think he just needs to embrace that a little more.
Glad you mentioned starting five, best five. The differential there is obviously really important too, because you're going to have your best five in the most important times of the game or the season. Ultimately, this ends up as what, a 9-man rotation, you think?
Okay, let's walk through the five. The nine.
In no particular order, but Kreese, Farrakhan, Battle, Slezinski, Edwards. Okay. Gotta play Sumnick. A cook.
Okay.
Seven. Here's we get picky. 3-point shooting. Is it as simple as Harris Wilson? That's nine. Do you just keep pushing Kobe Johnson further down the bench? Say, hey, you were great for the first part of the season, but still just 5 and 8. Because I don't know where you're going to get him point guard minutes at this point. Kreese is playing a bunch, and you can certainly have Farrakhan hold the ball and go fast. I don't know that you go much further than those four bench guys that I mentioned, which, again, did not include Kobe Johnson. There might be a day or a situation for him, but I'm not sure this team really wants to be going five deep on the bench and giving guys minutes just because they're on the team either.
Yeah, see, it gets so unclear after those. Because for me, I got 1, 2, 3, 4, the five that you mentioned. And then, like, a cook is definitely a sixth guy in there. And
I mean, maybe,
yeah, I mean,
perhaps some that's expendable.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say after the game he just came off of, which was, I think, pretty clearly his best game, at least in my memory right now. He played outstanding. He was not, like, his biggest issue has been that he's a liability on offense, and he was not a liability on offense. Heck, ran a play for him to tie the game in regulation. And, you know, if he can play like that, sure, he's in the rotation. I just don't know how consistently you do that, but you can kind of say that about a lot of the guys. Obviously, there are some flaws. I mean, there are flaws. Otherwise, they wouldn't be on the bench. They would be part of the starting five. But, like, Josiah Harris, like, I mean, offensively, they see, the plan seems to be, and you go stand in the corner and wait, and maybe you'll get a pass, which I don't love because he's a bigger guy and he does a decent job around the rim when he's down there. But it's hard to rebound the ball when you're stuck in the corner. Nave, again, he's a good talent, probably shouldn't be playing as much as he is right now, but he's kind of being thrust in that role. Excited for what he can do down the road. And you kind of just keep going there. Like, everybody has something they can do well, but then a lot of flaws. I mean, obviously with Seth Wilson and Kobe Johnson for various reasons.
I have a hard time believing they're going to usher Kobe Johnson back into the good graces after whatever happened, that he didn't even play a game. Different things I've heard or whatever, but there was some sort of a dispute there, obviously. Even Josh Hylert said it was his decision that they need to get back on the same page, and they were not at that point, so he decided not to play him. I just don't know if the buy-in is going to be all the way back there, but they might need him for a day, and can he continue to, I don't know, just for, I mean, this is, sorry for the phrase, but, like, they're running on a treadmill, some of these guys, because they're not going to catch up to the players who are ahead of them that they've been waiting on to get into the lineup. And what they did before, really, by and large, may not matter, too, because who they have now are better options and certainly better scorers, players, so on and so forth. Let's go over some statistics here, Chris. I don't want to bore people, but this is the reality of the situation, and I want to see if, like, any of this stuff alarms you as surprising, or, like, you know what, they're actually better than that. For example, their scoring offense, they're last in the Big 12 by almost 7 points, actually more than 7 points a game. Everybody in the Big 12 is scoring 75 or more. West Virginia's at 68. That's because they had to play slow early on. However, they're last in the Big 12 in scoring defense. And for a team that has played slow and tried to minimize possessions, that's alarming to me a little bit. And then the only team in the Big 12 with a negative scoring margin. I don't know that any of that is necessarily surprising. The scoring defense does surprise me a little bit just because the games have been so low scoring, but there are some very good defensive teams in this league too. Shooting percentages, they're 14th at 41%. Number 10 defensively, not terrible. Here's where things get interesting, Chris, and maybe this is where the influx of talent can change. The worst 3-point shooting, so no, they're not worse anymore, sorry. 13th in the Big 12 in 3-point shooting. With all their guards and the way they're going to dot people around the perimeter, That's going to have to improve if they're going to do anything, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Can it?
Yes,
Okay.
absolutely.
Is there a strategic thing here, or is this just a matter of let me dust this off here. Guys making shots.
Guys making shots. Well, guys making shots because you have guys that can make shots now. Let's put it that way. I think that's like you noted, you got an influx. Creases back, missed the first 9 games. Farrakhan, he's more of a slasher, but capable, battle capable. And then their pressure, their ability to kind of drive to the basket and draw extra attention should give the rest of the guys easier shots, more open shots, so that the threes they are taking should be more makeable than the threes they were taking previously.
Edwards helps here too. I know he's not a 3-point shooter, but boy, if they can kick it to him and pull a defender out, the kick out in the rotation, that's just a lot easier too. This will not surprise anybody here, but the rebounding has been major issue for West Virginia. Not the worst in the world, nevertheless, the worst in the Big 12. They're barely over at 0.3 to zero rebound, or 0.3 rebounding margin. And then if you look at some other teams, what they're doing on offensive rebounding. Let's see. Houston gets 16 offensive rebounds. West Virginia gets 10. That is number one and number 13 in the Big 12. West Virginia defensive rebounding, despite playing a lot of zone, is still pretty good. Number six in the conference, which means they're forcing shots and grabbing misses. They give up a lot of offensive rebounds. That's the issue there, too. But again, this is an Edwards stat. I'm not sure that a Cook or Slavinsky are designed to be under the basket players. It seems like they're perimeter guys, which means that they're having a rebound. Especially in offense, they're away from where they're going to be more beneficial in offense. Son McKen, for sure, he got some good rebounds last game too, but I just imagine they're going to have to find a way to patch it until Edwards get back and hope that some guards can come in and help him out and keep him out of foul trouble. But I don't know how this one gets better right away, especially when you look at who they're going to run into.
Yeah, the rebounding thing is the biggest concern for me, and I don't know how to feel after watching that Ohio State game, and looking at some of the numbers from the first half and second half. And I wrote this in my three thoughts after the game, but in that first half, West Virginia had more opportunities. And when you talk about rebounding, typically when you say opportunities, it's because the other team has missed a lot of shots. So because defensive rebounding is obviously easier than offensive rebounding, you tend to get more of them. And West Virginia had more defensive rebound opportunities, more rebounding opportunities than Ohio State by a considerable margin, yet Ohio State out rebounded them. And then in the second half, Ohio State had more rebounding opportunities, yet West Virginia won the rebounding battle in the second half. And that's when they came storming back. So that gives me some good feelings and some bad feelings here, because the good is, hey, they're capable. They're capable of doing that. They can do that. And the bad is, why did they not do it in the first half? And maybe some of that has to deal with some of the zone defense, as you noted. Some of it might have to deal with effort. But one thing that kind of really caught my attention, Raekwon Battle, 10 rebounds, right? Double digits. Not something he's done throughout his career, but when you watch that game and you look at it, like, this is an eye test thing, which I know some people don't really like that much, but he looks long. Like, he looks longer than 6'5". He looks like he was getting his fingertips and his hands on a lot of rebounds. And he is a guy who is capable of maybe not 10 rebounds a game, of course, but like five. And if he can get to five rebounds at that kind of shooting guard, wing, small forward, whatever you want to call it, position, that can really help out a lot of things, especially if he gets like four or five rebounds, but also gets his hands on another five that then just kind of get jostled around and somebody else grabs a rebound. He's just a guy that I think can do a lot more than just score. And we saw it in the Ohio State game, and I think that's pretty promising too.
All right, I want to end on him if you don't mind. I like getting 27 points a game. That's pretty cool. Not a fan of 56 shots and two assists. Call me old fashioned. I do like 56 shots, 19 threes, six makes, because he is a guy who's going to hit you with twos and being able to drive and hit mid range. I like 56 shots and 27 free throw attempts. I like eight steals, especially seven in the past two games. And I really like, as often as he has the ball in his hands, Chris, four turnovers. He's moving a lot. Like, he doesn't really make a lot of passes where he's going to throw it out of bounds because he doesn't really pass it very much. But this is a guy who's prone to maybe charges or getting double teamed and having the ball slapped away from him or traveling or anything that happens when you move with the ball like he does. Four turnovers is pretty good. A 2-4 assist to turnover ratio in three games. That's part of a conversation, I guess, but you're looking at 82 points, like I said, 27 points a game, and pretty good efficiency numbers, apart from that first game where 9 for 22, but after then, he is 18 for 34, which is right over 50%. Seemed like he's gotten more comfortable and perhaps hasn't been as rusty and sloppy would be the better word, as you might expect for somebody who's coming off that layoff and jumping into a team that was already in motion. Like, he's trying to catch up. And everybody's already moving it. And it seems like he has done pretty well. It does seem to me that he probably fits the bill of as talented as they thought he was. And by the way, 2 weeks in the Big 12, two-time Big 12 player of the week.
He could certainly be that spark plug. And I think this goes back to my point about this seems like two different offenses because, as you noted, only two assists out of all that usage rate and only two assists. Not ideal for a guy that's handling the ball that much, but a lot of this is being thrown on his back. Like, hey, you got to carry us right now. And yeah, that first game was a little rough, 1 of 8 from three, but 9 of 22 overall. But like you said, a little better than the next two games. And I think when he turns to driving the ball, if he could just keep his head up a little more on that dish, because he's getting double and triple team. They're collapsing on him when he drives to the basket. So if he can just get a couple assists, he's not here to get six assists a game.
No.
But like, and I don't think you're saying that either, but one or two, you know, two a game, that wouldn't hurt. If you're going to hold the ball for, you know, 30 minutes out of the 40-minute game, two assists might not be a bad thing. And again, I think it's just a couple of those where he's driving to the basket and instead of forcing it up in traffic with three guys on you, Maybe hit Josiah Harris while he's standing in the corner waiting on a three. Maybe hit, you know, Pat Sumnick when he's setting that screen and standing there on the other block waiting for a layup.
Time for me to roll my sleeves up again to Evan Miyakawa stats. I want to see player combos. I want to see who was good with Josiah Harris and who's not. Like, I wonder if him in one corner and Seth Wilson in the other is a good pairing. And I wonder if, like, Kobe Johnson and Harris are not a good pairing. It's that time, Chris. I feel like it's time to nitty-gritty this and figure it out. We're about to coin a phrase here. Are you ready? When you go to clinch a division in baseball, basketball, whatever, you have a magic number, right? You got to win so many games or the combination of your wins and the opponent losses. You're familiar with that concept, right?
I am.
The evil number, Chris. Seven losses, there's no coming back?
So seven more?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. For sure. Because you're going to have an eighth in the conference tournament, and that would get you to 16 losses. That's not going to work. The math doesn't work. So the evil number, Chris, is seven. You have to not lose seven games the rest of the way, and that's just woof. That's really tricky. That's the reality of the situation. I'm glad you broke it down like this, and I'm glad we'll print the t-shirts now too. Sound good? 2 p.m. ESPN Plus, West Virginia at Houston. 20-point spread, and I'll have to check out DraftKings. Excuse me, Caesar Sportsbook, and see what they say there. 20 points is a lot, but who knows? Going into see a defense team like the likes of which I haven't seen, going to be a juiced-up home crowd, and West Virginia still shorthanded without Jesse Edwards. Anything else you want to add here before we call this one an episode?
No, that sounds about right. Let's see if they can turn around, because I was kind of excited for this to be the ultimate test case of the committee to see if they were paying attention. I just don't know if they got the juice to get to that point.
I mean, at full strength, it's an exceptional season, and then they have to pull it off right now. I don't know how that's gonna work. We'll see. And again, like, every loss they take before Edwards gets back makes them have to do that much more. And again, that puts a lot on him as a savior, which maybe he is. We'll see. We don't know how he's going to coexist with all these guards because we just haven't seen it yet. He did not play the game. The battle was back, and he got hurt in that game and has been on the shelf since. We'll find out. When we do, we will let you know. Until then, I am Mike Casaza.
And I'm Chris Anderson.
We will talk to you then.